To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
And again, we are live.
Hello.
Once again, coming to you, we have me, Brian, your resident dumpster fire expert, Justin, our cephalopod friend, incognito, and Ella, connoisseur of alcohol and all things fun and wild.
Hello.
A little different. Ella, what are we sipping on today?
Well, today we are sipping on some Rittenhouse straight rye whiskey.
Another rye.
Another rye, big shocker. We know me and rye whiskeys. Actually, what got me to this was obviously the name Rittenhouse. I know that we've never had that before. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to check it out. And I turned it over, and I'm a sucker to read the stories on the back. Says Rittenhouse Straight Rye Whiskey is a storied Pennsylvania-style rye whose heritage commemorates Philadelphia's famous Rittenhouse Square. So, I was in a rush, and I thought, oh, it's made in Pennsylvania. You know, like, we're going to have a Pennsylvania whiskey. This is really cool. Bringing something really new to the dumpster fire. It's a Heaven Hill distillery. Heaven Hill in Bardstown, yeah. Kentucky. Yeah. Having said that, though, like, you know, that's still cool. So what they're talking about is it being a storied Pennsylvania style rye is that this is a very historic type of rye whiskey that was most popular in the Northeast U.S., especially in Maryland and Pennsylvania. And it does commemorate Philadelphia's Rittenhouse Square, which is pretty historic and epic. So we need to be careful. This is 100 proof. Ooh. But let us try it out. All right. To the dumpster fire. Now, the color should be a mahogany color, as we can see.
Yeah.
For aroma, you should definitely be smelling some dried fruits, toffee, and some sweet peppers.
Yeah.
Which is kind of odd, some sweet peppers in your whiskey. Yeah. For taste, we're shooting for cocoa, citrus, cinnamon, nutmeg, and vanilla, which, I mean, to me, that's just a wonderful dessert or a wonderful rye whiskey. And the finish should be a lingering maple-like spiciness. So has anybody gotten that lingering maple-like spiciness?
I'm getting the spicy. I get the maple more at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the spiciness, it's got almost a peppery spiciness to it at the end.
I know this is going to sound strange. This is another really complex whiskey. And I've noticed that when you move up the chain, there's this like mid shelf where everything's complex.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's a rye. And so the big thing I like about the ryes is they have that more peppery flavor to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a very, if you ever try one of the ryes that are unfinished, unaged, it's a very specific taste.
Really?
Oh, yes. And I mean, that's somewhat frowned upon, but it's moonshine.
Yeah.
Rye moonshine. Yeah. But you'll really get the taste of the rye, and you'll see how it ages into this.
So I think this could definitely, you know, be a kind of like a house whiskey at the Tucker household or at the dumpster fire. It's very good, I think. Just a little bit of info. It is named after one of the finest urban public places in the United States, which is Rittenhouse Square. Rittenhouse Square is pretty historic. It's in Philadelphia. Around the time of all of the uprisings, you know, and civil unrest where this country was kind of forming, a lot of parks and squares were turned into makeshift cemeteries, and there were, you know, a lot of riots and events held, and there was a lot of upheaval. Rittenhouse Square always stayed peaceful. It had always stayed a park. Like, it never became a makeshift cemetery. So that's something really cool. It's named after David Rittenhouse, who is a descendant of a prominent family that established and operated the first paper mill.
Nice.
So a lot of history in this little bottle.
Yeah.
So that WSWA Spirits Tasting Competition, that 2009 Best Rye Whiskey, that stands for Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America.
Nice.
So obviously different categories, things have gotten put on hold because of COVID, but I do believe 2021 is back to normal.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And so in doing this, again, it's a Heaven Hill distillery. So I wanted to kind of go into a little bit of Heaven Hill. It being from Kentucky, we're close to Kentucky. We've been to Bardstown. We've worked the Bardstown Bourbon Festival.
Yeah.
So it started in Bardstown.
Four Roses was on strike at the time.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Heaven Hill was formed or started in 1935 by the Shapiro brothers. Basically, the Shapiro brothers had found their fortune in department stores. So a group of people came together and said, we need to make a distillery. And basically, the Shapiro brothers, we need your money.
Yeah.
So the original distillery was built on land owned by William Heavenhill.
Nice.
And it was supposed to be Heavenhill Distillery, as in one word, like his last name. However, there was a typo. And in 1935, it cost $10 to fix the typo, and they felt it wasn't worth the money. So it stayed Heavenhill.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, get in your time machine, because we're heading back to November 7th, 1996. I don't know where you were. I don't know where I was. I was 10. So I'm assuming I was sitting in a classroom somewhere, unless it was a Saturday. Then I was either outside riding my bike. Well, no, it was pretty cold. I was probably watching cartoons or playing Nintendo. I just want you to picture rivers of flaming whiskey, because, ladies and gentlemen, Heavenhill burnt. There was a fire, and there were literally barrels of whiskey bursting from the flames. So there were rivers of fire coming out of this distillery. Lightning is believed to be the cause of that. They reported a loss of $30 million. Wow. 92,000 barrels of whiskey were lost that day. The world will never be the same. I would like to give a moment of silence for those barrels of whiskey.
Where could we be had that not happened?
But I want to tell you about the distillery world, especially with whiskeys, bourbons of, you know, specifically. They rallied together, all of the competitors. They could have literally said, this is what we need, they're never coming back from this.
Mm-hmm.
They literally got phone calls asking what they could do to help. They were opening up their factories to let them, you know, to let them use some of their equipment until they could get back on their feet. They rented a heavy machinery to get to the fifth floor of the grain elevator and found untouched the original yeast from 1935. So this is still the same Heavenhill yeast that was from the 1935. They found it still cold to the touch.
Really?
So the fire had not touched it. So this is the same yeast.
That's
yes.
Cool.
So that's
that is neat.
Yeah.
It's the fungus that has given us so much.
So ladies and gentlemen, I very much appreciate your time as I got to pick the whiskey and give my history on it. Sip carefully, as it is 100 proof.
Oh, fair.
And I have softball tonight, so I have to sip very carefully.
And Ella took this over because, you know, starting new jobs and things like that got pretty hectic. She started a new job too. She's pretty hectic, but she really thought she could take this. I think she did a great job with it. So what we're going into tonight, it's pretty much a deep dive. We've talked about this before. It was requested on one of the polls that I put up online. We're going to talk about forgotten history and kind of the way things are mixed up. The way I want to start this is, this was recent history. It was 2013. We had the Chelyabinsk meteorite. And does anybody, I mean, anyone listening, you might have seen this as a blip on the news. Because there were all these dash cams in Russia that see this giant fireball coming through the sky.
Yeah.
And then a massive shockwave hits.
Yeah.
So this was actually a relatively small meteorite when you scale things out. And the explosion it caused coming into our atmosphere and breaking up was larger than that of a nuclear bomb. Everywhere picked it up.
Really?
It was way worse than you would think seeing a dash cam of it from a guy who knows how far away, that was just like, oh gosh. It damaged 7,200 buildings, hurt 1,500 people. Chunks of it did make it to Earth, fragments did.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting one, and I think that should have been kind of a more of a wake-up call to everyone that, hey, like, there are big rocks out there just kind of being flicked at us consistently by space. It does not care about us.
And we know for a fact it's happened multiple times throughout history.
Yes.
I mean, about a quarter of Mexico as a country we've found is a crater. They actually theorize that that's the one that got the dinosaurs. Which brings me to another fact. Do you know what a dinosaur's least favorite reindeer is?
Ooh, hold on, let me think. A dinosaur's least favorite reindeer.
Comet.
Hashtag dad joke. I love it.
That's wonderful. Man. So, we've talked about this a lot. If you ever look throughout history, almost every religion has the flood story.
The deluge myth.
Yeah, the deluge. There you go. Yeah. And this is a common thing throughout. We find all over the place these giant impact sites.
Yeah.
So there's glacial movement, you see those, and then we find meteor impacts, large impacts.
More and more scientists, archaeologists are coming to terms with Graham Hancock's research.
Mm-hmm.
He's been kind of a laughingstock for the last 30 years in the science community, and now they're proving him right. He believed that there was a meteor impact on the ice shelf over North America, and then a secondary meteor impact on the ice shelf over Europe, which would have caused flash unfreezing. It would have caused floods. It would have caused hundreds of years of chaos, releasing millions of gallons. And it's a self-fulfilling cycle. You start to melt the ice, that warms the world.
Mm-hmm.
So more ice melts.
Right.
You're talking about 2 and 3 mile thick ice sheets that were over northern half of North America and most of Europe.
Well, and we are a planet of, 70% water anyway?
Yeah.
So, I mean...
But a lot of that water was in the form of ice.
Right.
During the last ice age. Last major ice age. Yeah. We've had 2 minor ones since. But we tend to believe as people that there was no way human beings had civilization pre-ice age.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you take into consideration that every major mythos or pantheon across the globe has a deluge myth. They all, I mean, you're talking about 10,000 miles apart. Cultures have a deluge myth. All the way back to what we consider to be the first culture, that would be the Sumerians in Uruk. In Uruk, they have a deluge myth. I mean, it goes all the way back to what we consider the beginning, which to me says... an extreme flood event, let's say a meteorite hitting the ice shelf and causing millions of gallons to flow at a time, would wipe away any semblance of a civilization. There's not a civilization on the planet that could withstand that. There would be survivors, of course, but as a civilization, it would cause it to collapse. And I think more and more evidence, we look at sites like... I never can pronounce it correctly. There, the pyramids. There's a step pyramid off the coast of Yukaganijima in Japan. Literally, the last time this step pyramid was above water was pre-ice age, and or during the ice age. So the science tends to call it a mystery. Which is ridiculous. So that means they either have 2 theories, that it was built during the Ice Age, or they think ancient Japanese learned how to scuba dive and build a pyramid underwater.
I'm going to go with that one. That seems way more plausible.
Yeah, and they say it's a mystery. Like I'm like, that's not a mystery. We have tons of evidence that there was civilization during the Ice Age and most likely pre-Ice Age.
I think they're being very ignorant of how powerful moving water is.
Yeah.
So when you look at the 08 flood of, you know, Columbus.
Yeah.
I mean, it ruined records in the basement of the hospital. I mean, you know, imagine if those records, you know, weren't backed up. You know, this and that. Like, it destroyed entire records. That was a relatively tame flood, and that is not to offend anybody that lived through it. It was not tame when it happened to you. But it wasn't, you know, an Ice Age level flood.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, when you look at what it tore up, look at the Ohio River. When you are on it and you look up that giant hill, all that used to be, that was cut out by water.
Yeah.
So I mean, like,
that's true.
The
ice shelf melting would fill that to the brim.
Yes.
It would be floods unlike anything we've seen in the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have wiped any records away. And then you look at the King's List, the Sumerian King's List. It literally goes through in detail to their founding king 150,000 years ago. Not 9,000 years ago when Sumer was supposedly founded. Their king's list goes back 150, some believe that it is actually saying 250 thousand years ago. And I mean, you're talking well pre-Ice Age. Mm-hmm. And then the Ice Age would have made many civilizations collapse. I don't think the Ice Age in itself would end civilization as we know it. But you couple that with an already struggling human population because of the Ice Age, and then it all melts suddenly and wipes what is there off the face of the planet. And that's why the Sumerians knew they'd been here. I mean, farming did not start 9,000 years ago. I think that was farming starting over. And then you look at sites like Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe in what is now modern-day Turkey, part of the Levant, it was purposely covered. Purposely covered with debris, with wood, rocks, sand. They don't know why. Well, if you got a giant flood coming, you want to protect your holy site. Mm-hmm. Now, this holy site is dated back to at least 15,000 to 17,000 years. Supposedly, farming didn't start till 9,000 years. But Göbekli Tepe would have held 165,000 people. Yeah. How do you feed 165,000 people?
Hunting and gathering. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. If farming's not a thing, you cannot feed that level. And that's why we say we were hunters and gatherers till 9,000 years ago. Because there was no way to feed mass groups if there's no farming. Well, we've got more and more evidence. Every year we're coming up with more evidence that's just not true, that the timeline's wrong. In a lot of ways, science can be dogmatic, just as dogmatic as religion. You come up with a new idea or see new evidence, there are people that are going to fight it. They're going to fight it because it becomes less about being fact-based and it becomes belief. Yeah. They say, I believe this theory, I believe this theory. And that's about belief. That's not about the facts. And science is supposed to be evidence-based. You present me new evidence, I should be able to change my mind. I should be able to change how I view the world with new evidence. And I think we're looking at a big reckoning, especially about our own history on this planet. I think as human beings, we're about to learn a lot about how long we've been on the planet, how long we've been in civilization. I think there's a reckoning coming. I really do. We're just a couple of major discoveries away from saying, okay, yeah, the timeline is fucked.
It's awful. I remember seeing, Graham Hancock said some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing basically the apologies to him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's one of those guys that some of the incendiary stuff he said had nothing to do with his theory. It's kind of like, oh, you know, well.
It's hard. You got to kind of take what he says with a grain of salt because he has said some pretty ridiculous, not fact-based stuff. But then you read his most recent book, Magician of the Gods, and you're like, this is all good science. Yeah. I mean, he's teamed up with some of the world's leading archaeologists and one of the world's leading geologists. Mm-hmm. And he's proving that the water erosion, his geologist, I can't think of his name right now, proved that the water erosion on the Great Pyramid of Giza puts it at more like 15,000 years old to 20,000 years old, not 5,000 years old. Four times that. I mean, three to four times that. That's nuts. And I think there's going to be more and more people apologizing to Graham Hancock soon. Yeah. His science has gotten better over the years, from his first book, Chariots of the Gods, all the way to now. He's become more and more fact-based as time goes on.
Well, you want to talk about how, okay, you would see this meteor strike over Russia that kind of got glazed over. It was a big deal.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a huge deal.
Go back to the Tunguska incident, and this happened in 1908, and this was a huge deal then. So Tunguska is a spot in Siberia where this massive explosion was detected. Lights in the sky. At the time, we were monitoring this stuff, and they said that it changed the Earth's magnetic field. It was so big.
Really?
So they sent a group out in 1927 and said there was no trace of the meteor. But it had knocked the trees over for miles around this giant hole.
Yeah, there was a shockwave,
yes,
obviously.
It killed probably millions of animals. This was a big deal. Now we move forward to where we have things like radioisotope testing and stuff, and they found out that almost certainly it was a fragment of a comet that hit the earth. It's another one. So that's that's a short span of time, 08 to now, in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And it's getting more and more frequent.
You're talking like, just a little over a century.
Yeah. Everybody didn't have cell phone cameras, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's things are changing rapidly in the way that this is going to get talked about and addressed.
And that's one of the things that's never set right with me. You see just how we've changed as human beings in the last 100 years.
Yep.
Just the how more advanced we are than we were 100 years ago. You look at our medical abilities, our healthcare, from our technology we use on a day-to-day basis, has changed so drastically that it's almost, if you took a person from 100 years ago, they wouldn't recognize the world today.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to tell me that people were on this planet for 40,000 years and we just figured out how to build a civilization 9,000 years ago? It took us 30,000 years when we've made this kind of progress in a century? Like, that doesn't even, it does not square. That is a round hole. It's crazy to me.
Well, and like you said, you can't really track the population in ancient time.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the crazier things that I've seen that is completely forgotten history in person, and that is when we were in Fort Walton in Florida.
Yeah.
There's a Indian burial mound. Yeah. You can walk up it. It's got steps. It's kind of neat. There's a little museum beside it. And then right beside it is a schoolhouse, like post office that they've preserved. You can walk in.
Mm-hmm.
They have the work from back then. And it is insane. People were smarter than us back then.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I can tell you for sure. It's hard.
Yeah.
This is like sixth grade work.
Yeah.
But when I went into the museum and was walking around, we know quite a bit about arrowheads. My dad had older people around here he spent a lot of time with, and they were collectors.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine's dad's a big collector. So the oldest dated point we have is the Clovis points. They call them turkey tails.
Mm-hmm.
People dig those up right around here.
Yeah, pretty regular.
There were some weird looking points in the case, and it's no longer legal to dig up any of these mounds. They're all over the U.S. And I asked the lady, I said, well, what tribe were these people? You know, who they belonged to? And she's like, oh, no. These people predate history.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to think about that comment.
Yeah.
These people that built these burial mounds, that made all these tools on display,
predate history.
And that just, I was like, what do you mean?
Complete misnomer.
She's like, oh, they're way older, honey.
Yeah.
And she wasn't kidding.
You're probably talking 30, 40,000 years.
And the theory is that this is on the Gulf Coast in Florida, and they figure that this civilization had set up and established for long enough to build burial mounds all over the place.
Yeah, which takes hundreds of years.
You have to have enough people die
to
have a purpose for them.
Yeah.
And then they think that a hurricane made its way up the Gulf, which is a rare happening, but it does happen.
Yeah.
Katrina, things like that.
Yeah.
And it just drove them out. They either lost a bunch of people or said, hey, we're going inland.
And that's the thing. Society is very fragile. It even is now. If a strong enough storm could knock out half of our grid right now. Society is always a fragile thing. So you see these societies that have popped up throughout history that are much older than what they claim. I mean, you got the Topper site. You'll love this.
Mm-hmm.
In North Carolina, the Topper site, I cannot think of the archaeologist. He was over the dig in the early 90s. And there's this line. It's a black line. It's where there were mass fires here in North America. They always say, do not dig below that line, you won't find any human.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. There's no humans below that line. Well, he thought that was silly, so he just kept digging. He found the most Clovis artifacts that anyone had ever found.
Yes.
But he just went past. It's literally, if you look it up, you can see this black line in the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You don't dig past that point if you're looking for people. He went 30 feet below. And from the way I understand it, a foot is a few hundred years. So he went several thousand years down. He found tons of evidence of people. And he eventually lost his job and his funding because he was finding so much evidence that didn't fit the narrative that they shut him down. Topper's opened back up as of 2016, I believe. But it was shut down for like 15 years because it didn't fit the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're finding evidence of a civilization that predates Clovis? That's not possible, so we're going to shut this down. I'm like, well,
well, doesn't yeah, found fit the it. Rhyme scheme. You're kicked out of the band.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you can go to Fort Walton and walk into a museum that this is known.
Yeah, that it's just fact.
It's very strange. There's also the extinction of megafauna is pretty interesting here, too. There are two theories on what happened here. The two leading theories. I mean, it can always be disease, or they just slowly, selectively bred to shrink down.
Yeah, yeah.
But the prevailing theories are that it was either overpredation by humans, which would make sense, or climate change, which would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
You suddenly have these people lose their established farming land.
Yeah.
They have to hunt.
Yeah.
We're persistent hunters. We're pretty smart. Are you going to hunt a bunch of little rats? No.
No.
You're going to hunt the big shit. for your group.
Yeah.
So that makes perfect sense to me. Both those likely happened.
Yeah, I imagine it was a combination of those two. And the climate would be changing rapidly. If we're talking about a meteorite hitting the ice shelf, you're talking about probably a millennia of absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Because that would be huge amounts of moisture being released back into the system. So you're talking about higher than normal rainfall for 1,000 years, flooding, flash flooding, worse winters, worse storms, because that's what happens when you have more moisture in the air. You're talking about changing and warming the climate severely, in a very quick fashion, as far as when you look at deep time. A millennia is no time at all. That is a blip. And to make that kind of change from an ice age to now, essentially to the climate we're used to or what we've grown up with, that's huge. That's fast. And to do that in a millennia, and I'm talking chaos, entire species would be falling off, because they'd no longer have access to this one plant that they grew to survive off of, they adapted to. Humans would be starving, so they'd start hunting the big game. And I could totally see climate change and predation being the two major factors. But it's kind of weird how quickly they fell off. I mean, you had these species that were dominant in North America and Europe, and all of a sudden they're just gone. They're just not here anymore.
Well, and something I think that is very odd, I don't think and pardon me if my date is wrong, was it the 2003... the tsunami, was that in 2003 or 2006?
I believe so. I believe 2003.
Early 2000s, you know, the giant tsunami was in the Indian Ocean. Very devastating. Again, the power of water. But what I find so odd is just how little we've been taught about that. So I was a 2003, I'd have been end of my junior, beginning of my senior year of high school.
It was actually 2004. December 26th.
So I was end of my first semester at college. But imagine this. The tsunami was caused by a massive earthquake on the ocean floor.
Yeah.
The power of that earthquake mixed with the amount of water that moved in that tsunami moved the earth on its axis by an inch.
Yeah.
So, again, we are a giant floating sphere, okay? Yeah. Sorry if you're a flat earther. I'm going to just go with that we're a sphere.
There are flat earthers all around.
All around
the world.
All around the globe.
All around the globe. I like that. So, you know, we're already tilted a little bit anyway. You know, that determines who gets the sunlight, at what time of the day, you know, weather patterns, seasons.
Yeah.
So an inch doesn't seem like a lot, but when you think about that, we're spinning, we're tilted, you know, we're spinning around something. Like an inch change is huge. And so I think we've seen definite changes in our seasons.
Since we were children?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it just kills me that it seems like that inch shift in our axis in our tilt, it gets no respect. No one talks about it. I don't know that people are studying it.
I'm sure there are, it's probably a select few.
Yeah, and to me that just seems like something major.
And that's the thing. They believe that's actually what caused the Ice Age, was a shift in our axis. That's what caused the Ice Age. And, I mean, it was probably only a few inches shift. I mean, probably less than 6 inches. I don't know.
They're theorizing that we moved an inch.
Yeah.
That's huge. A lot of water that moves.
The actual measurement is 2.7 milliarc seconds.
Hmm.
Which I'm assuming that's like a degree
level. Yeah.
But it shortened a day by 6.8 microseconds.
Really?
This is
that's the math crazy.
I'm looking at now.
That's crazy.
And it's just,
this. I'm reading about this.
Yeah. That just hits so much because it kind of hits with the what's not talked about, what's not popular mm-hmm. in science, not fitting narratives, and how powerful water. I mean, like, it yeah. just kind of, that it event kind of right hits in. A lot of what we've talked about.
Yeah. I think we have to give ourselves a certain illusion of structure.
Yeah, we
do. Stability.
Yeah.
Or people will go mad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once they realize that the universe really doesn't care about us and we're kind of just winging it and mm-hmm. no one knows what's going on, that's when people kind of have an existential crisis. And I think a lot of what we do as a society is to just keep people at a level playing field mm-hmm. to where they're not having an existential crisis. Because yeah. Anyone who's sat down and thought about it long enough, the fact that we're on a water-covered ball spinning real fast in the middle, hung just right in the middle of space mm-hmm. Around a sun, like, that's
kind of... It is expanding and eventually will eat us.
Yeah. It's a pretty intense thing. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate things like that, though. I like things that let me know my problems are small and that they will not be remembered. they are meaningless in the face of the universe, so I appreciate that.
That's a... One of the things Alan Moore was saying is that a wizard or a sorcerer could curse you, and it might make your hands lay funny. You might have a child with a club foot.
Yeah.
He said, but the bard is the most powerful person in history, because the bard could have someone laughing at you long after you're dead.
Yeah. yeah.
And that yeah. is that
it's
is
the storytellers.
Yeah, that's
the storytellers.
That's been kind of one of my revelations of the power of this right here.
Yeah.
So I really was thinking about that.
I've always been fascinated with the stories we tell ourselves. I've always been fascinated by myth and comparative myth. And one of my favorite proverbs, it's an African proverb, says, until the lion learns to read, all the stories will glorify the hunter. And I fully believe that.
Oh, wow.
And the power of knowledge is it's everything. And give voice to people, I think, is important. Build, spread stories is important. Mm-hmm. That's who we are as a species. It's the stories we tell ourselves. And it's an ever-evolving thing. But there are certain things that haven't changed throughout time. We still tell ourselves kind of similar stories since the beginning of storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy. I don't know if you've ever read The 10,000 Faces of the Hero, I believe. I can't think of the guy's name. He wrote a lot about comparative mythology. He kind of started comparative mythology. But it's literally, there's only, I think it's four different stories that ever get told. Four different stories.
But just different variations.
Yeah, they're just told in a different way. Mm. And I think that's a fascinating look at how we tell stories and who we are as a people.
Very, very interesting stuff. I mean, I touched on this a little bit last time about the battles that have been fought over coal miners and the Matawan Massacre, actually, is what that's about. And I did find a reference, going back a little bit, for our government intentionally poisoning alcohol.
Yeah.
Always trust the government, Brian. Stop that.
Yeah, just ask any Native American.
We're here to help.
Another thing, that was Woodrow Wilson, the super racist Democrat that got us into the national bank. He was part of that.
He was something else. He always claimed after his presidency that his hand was forced in everything he did, that he never got to make a choice as a president.
Oh.
That's what he always claimed. He said the president has no power. Is what he claimed for several articles on. But yeah, so I mean, just the it's so funny how quickly what we learn changes. So I was just reading an article recently about the Aztec Empire, one of the most advanced early empires, mm-hmm. And
Aztec Empire was Mexico. That's what you know about that. Mm-hmm. Even people that don't know anything about the right. Aztecs, yeah. they know they're from Mexico.
They're from Mexico.
Well, up until the 1840s, until the Mexican-American War, all of our maps labeled the Four Corners region, which is Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico, as the ancestral home of the Aztecs. They actually believe, because in their myth, they came from a large sea. Well, if they came from that area, that would be Salt Lake. It is one of the largest saltwater bodies this far inland. And and you look at the language grouping. You can go all the way to the First Nations peoples of Canada, mm-hmm. all the way down into Mexico, and their language is so similar. I mean, things are spelled the same way, they yeah. mean the same things. It's like, yeah, these were the same people. I mean, it's fact that they were definitely once upon a time the same people. They speak the same tongue. And I can't think of the name of that language group, but it's huge. It literally... essentially from the west coast of Canada all the way down to the west coast of Mexico, mm-hmm. All the way through the west coast in the southwest of the United States. There's this huge language group, and you can watch the migration from the land bridge, yeah. essentially, from Alaska down into Canada, mm-hmm. all the way down the west coast. It's pretty crazy.
What you said, it really makes sense. So it's not that we are learning incorrectly that the Aztecs were from, originated in Mexico. It's that we need to kind of add on that little sub-note, you know, that subsection. Don't forget that, you know, in, 1854, we bought part of Mexico,
yeah.
and that became Arizona,
yeah.
New Mexico. So yeah. it's not lying that the Aztecs were from Mexico.
Yeah.
It's that what we think of as Mexico
was not the same.
Exactly. So yeah. they did come from Mexico, because in that time it would be, but it yeah. is present day
yeah.
Four Corners region.
Yeah.
And I think they need to differentiate that.
And a lot of that was we had gone to war with Mexico mm-hmm. during the Polk administration, which was, the last map was in 1847 that said that the Four Corners region was the ancestral home, and it just seemed to be common knowledge. It mm-hmm. was on all the maps. And then we go to war with Mexico, and that's no longer the case. Like, oh, they're other than. They're not us. Yeah, they don't count now. I think it's funny, during the Polk administration, we actually took Mexico City and literally in their capital planted American flags. And we forced them into selling us the Southwest mm-hmm. To have their country back. Now, I like to think about, what would America look like today if it went all the way to the southern tip of Mexico? It would be a different country.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a very different country. This mass exodus out of Mexico wouldn't be happening, because those would be Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It would be it's weird to think about subtle things like that, because Polk actually thought about keeping Mexico. Like, this is ours now.
Removing it?
Yeah.
It's crazy to me when you think, because, you know, growing up, I was born in 1986. The United States was well established, or so you think, you know,
yeah.
old people, you know, people are old, blah, blah, blah. My mother was born, I won't out you, mother, because you're 29, everybody knows that. But my mother was alive before America was 50 United States. She
yeah.
was born when there were 48 states.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, my mother, which is one generation ahead of me, above
yeah.
me, the fact that when she was born, when I was born, there was a different number of states,
yeah.
just blows my mind, because I just think,
yeah.
well, all this was done in the 1800s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that's
how
we
do
it.
And when you think of, like, that concept of time.
Yeah, and when you look at deep time, and the 1800s was not long ago at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
seeing as how the 90s were still a decade ago, I mean,
yeah,
the 90s are always going to be a decade
that's
ago.
That's how I view the 90s. It's crazy. And just in our lifetime, think about it this way. When you were a teenager,
you always thought of Led Zeppelin as an old band.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
The bands we listen to from our teen years are actually older than Led Zeppelin
Shut
was
up. I don't when want to continue we were this. Teenagers. This podcast is done.
I mean, Led Zeppelin was dropping albums in the late 70s. Uh-huh. you're talking 20 years difference yep. for us. We're looking at 30 years for some of our stuff that we're still yep. listening to.
Ladies and gentlemen, and just like that, that's how Justin got kicked out of the podcast. He made me think.
Yeah.
The scaling of time, even yes. on a small scale, is very difficult for people to do.
It really is.
And then you talked earlier, there's more difference in time between Cleopatra and the building of the pyramids
yes.
than there are between Cleopatra and the iPhone.
And the freaking iPhone. The that iPhone. Just blows
this is,
my
this
mind.
This is the concept when I say yeah. Exchange of knowledge went from a solid to a liquid, yeah. and we're approaching steam.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean by that.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
It's crazy. And like the fact we were talking about earlier, we know for a fact that the woolly mammoth still had populations in Siberia when the Great Pyramid of Giza was built.
There you go.
I mean, you're only talking 4,800 years ago that the Great Pyramid of Giza was built, mm-hmm. and we know for a fact there were woolly mammoths there. Well, and I mean, some scientists will tell you that there were woolly mammoths in Siberia long after that. Mm-hmm. Some say into the 20th century. That's not been proven. It certainly hasn't been disproven, but it's not been proven. Not in any kind of public way. So, but yeah, the world changes quick. It's kind of crazy.
And, you know, the whole saying, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very random one.
Yeah.
Did you know there is one thing that is banned from commodities trading in the United States?
What's that?
Onions.
Really?
Now, this is important because we have the whole GameStop and AMC yeah. debacle.
Yeah.
Where they were like, hey, let's all group up together. Yeah. And hammer these hedge funds.
Yeah.
And
let's
so they,
change the
they
game.
Pulled like a little trick on them. Well, in 1959, all of a sudden, onion futures become the most traded commodity on the Chicago Market.
So it's happened. It's happened so, before.
Yes. So what happened is a guy named Sam Siegel and Vincent Kasuga, they realized that the onions were becoming so traded, they were a hot commodity at the time. So they bought up tons of them. They controlled 98% of the exchanges and onions in Chicago. So once they had the market cornered, they did the same thing. They short sold.
Huh.
And then it gets even sneakier. They apparently took the rotting onions and would clean them up and ship them out and have them shipped back in the same boxes.
Oh,
so it looked
my
like
Lord.
There were even more coming.
Yeah, they're doubling their numbers.
Yes. So this was kind of, in a way, this was pretty shady because this hurt the onion farmers.
Yeah.
The GameStop yeah. AMC thing is hurting the hedge funders.
Yeah.
Who literally.
Yeah, that's not hurting any of the
yeah,
small guys.
Yeah, I mean, unless you've got your money in one of those hedge funds, which
yeah.
I highly doubt you do. Most people have a managed mutual fund, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that ended up resulting in a law that prohibited onion futures trading and is one of the only things banned from futures trading.
Wow.
To this day, 55, that happened.
That's so crazy.
It's one of those things. I didn't realize there was anything
yeah,
banned on futures trading, but yeah, there is.
That's crazy. I was actually just reading about some modern disasters, and I believe it was Boston, and the around the turn of the century, mm-hmm. they had the country's largest molasses factory. Well, they kept the molasses in big like water towers.
Right.
One collapsed and covered the entire south side of Boston in about 6 inches of molasses. It killed thousands. It was a tidal wave. Some witnesses said was up to 45 feet tall.
Oh my
of
God.
Of molasses.
That's can, the block.
Yeah. Can you imagine that slow moving wave coming at you? You've been screaming by it for 5 minutes when it hits you. I'm like, no! It's like Death by Zamboni.
That is crazy. You know, you never hear about this stuff.
No.
I think this little stuff needs to be included in history.
I do too.
Not just the Byzantine Empire and the Romans.
Yeah.
Get bogged down in that.
It was Boston's North End in 1919. I was pretty close. And an entire tank of molasses burst on January 15th, 1919. They actually think that it got too cold for it. And tank that was holding it was faulty.
Right.
And they call it the Great Molasses Flood. It injured over 1,500 people, killed 21. It covered literally the entire north side of Boston, the north end, Boston's north end, in up to 6 inches of the sticky substance. That's pretty crazy.
That is, I never have I heard of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I do enjoy the movie The Blob, the 80s version. Yeah. Grew up watching that. One thing, it's just the little kind of stories about time and stuff. So, like, the evil world of TikTok, I know, I'm sorry. Again, I'm addicted. But there's, is it like Inconvenient History or something? It's this guy, very dorky guy in a bow tie. He's hilarious. He has kind of a lisp. And he'll tell you uncomfortable facts in history. And it'll be like, you know, that Cleopatra's closer to the iPhone than the Great Pyramid.
Interesting.
One of them he talked about was the first, like, university and, like, what was going on in the world. And so I can't remember what he said, and I heart way too many TikToks to actually go back into my TikTok history and find it.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, thinking, again, oh, an old established university, Harvard. Harvard was founded in 1636. The first university that was founded that is still running to this day, still being operated, the University of Carvein, I'm butchering that, this is my hill jack, K-A-R-V-E-E-I-N, was founded in 859 A.D. in Fez, Morocco.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. So, like, there were, you know, universities in this world before we were ever thought of.
600 years.
Yeah. So, half a millennia. If this tells you anything, we were still in the Tang Dynasty in China.
Yeah.
Okay. And Japan was on its 55th emperor. We're currently on 126th.
There's a meme that went around that I actually looked up, and it is factual. And it says that the samurai were abolished in Japan, and the telegraph had came out prior to that.
Yeah.
So, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated in 1865.
Yeah.
So there's a large span, like 20 years of time, where a samurai could have sent Abe Lincoln a fax.
That's so crazy.
And it's true. I looked at that. It is absolutely truthful.
That is so crazy.
Yeah, that is the concept of time that gets mixed up.
And I just want to talk about, and again, I sincerely apologize. I'm probably going to butcher this. Hiro Onoda, who was a Japanese soldier. He was enlisted for World War II when he was 18. In 1944, he was put to Lubang Island, which is southwest of Manila. His whole purpose was to hamper enemy attacks.
Yep.
And he did a lot of guerrilla warfare, hide in the jungles, gather intel. Japan surrendered in 1945. The only way for Japan to get info to their soldiers who are on this island is to drop pamphlets. However, don't know why, there were typos, they didn't look very good. I mean, I'm sure they were scampering. So Hiro thought it was propaganda to get him to come out, so he didn't believe it. For 29 years, he lived in the jungle, in the caves, still killing people.
I've heard of this.
Gathering intel. Until finally, I couldn't even find how they told him that the war was over 29 years ago. Can you imagine being that poor guy that was doing his job for 29 years after the war was over? And he was a great soldier. He was doing his job. It's not like he was AWOL hiding. He was actively gathering intel. And so imagine, so from 1944 was 29 years. We're in the 70s. From 44 to 73, how much the world had changed, and he's just got to adapt. He's got to walk into it.
Yeah.
Because he was living in caves.
Walk out of the jungle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of people that lived in caves, I've been doing a lot of research on Miyamoto Musashi. I don't know if you're familiar with him. So there's this huge trope throughout all kung fu films and anime of the lone swordsman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real guy. there's been thousands of things based on his life. He's the most famous of the Ronin swordsmen of the late 1500s, early 1600s. We know for a fact he had 63 sword duels. He won all 63. He was known for showing up late and pissing and not bathing just to piss off his opponent, get inside their head. He was brilliant, and when he was about the middle of his career, he was kind of at his prime in his 30s. A kid really became fascinated with him, started following him around, writing down all of his deeds, like logging it. So we have this guy's entire life logged from this 14-year-old kid. Well, so he'd gone into retirement. He said the greatest act a warrior can make is to lay down a sword. So he laid down a sword. He became Buddhist, went and lived in a cave. Well, there was this young guy who fought with a nodashi, which is the longest, heaviest of all the Japanese swords, who was unstoppable. No one could beat this kid. They were saying he was better than Miyamoto. He heard about this and came into town and talked to him, challenged him to a duel. The kid accepted. This kid, at this point, Miyamoto is in his 40s, late 40s, in the 1600s, late 40s, which is a very different late 40, to this 25-year-old kid who fights with a much heavier, stronger sword. Well, he shows up late again. They're supposed to meet at noon. It's noon. Thousands of people have gathered because this is supposed to be the sword fight of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
He is literally there. No one knew he was there. He was on a boat out in the wharf. He had rented a boat from a fisherman, and he was carving a nodashi out of one of the oars. He fought this kid with a wooden nodashi, killed this kid with a boken, with a wooden practice sword that he had just carved himself.
Wow.
Just to prove he was Miyamoto Musashi. And then he retired to his cave, and he wrote a book that's still in print to this day called The Book of the Five Rings. I've read it several times.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is an epic way to fuck about,
yeah,
or fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, I own an odachi.
Dan?
Yes, it is massive. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a Damascus blade. It's a real sword. It's got they have a dip in the center of the blade on the sides.
Yeah.
And they're illegal in Japan.
Really?
They banned them. Yeah, they set a limit on the length of swords at some point.
Probably because of the Ronin sword fighters of the 16th century.
It's possible.
I'm guessing. Because it was kind of the rock star of the day. These men would get very wealthy. They'd get very famous. And it's funny because Miyamoto didn't care about wealth. He literally, if he didn't spend his gold on drink or women, he just gave it away in whatever village he is in. He did not care to sleep outside. He didn't bathe. The reason why he didn't bathe is because he was afraid he had made so many enemies. He didn't want to be that vulnerable. He felt like bathing would put him in such a vulnerable position that he wouldn't be able to defend himself.
That makes
and
sense.
And he felt like his life was in danger everywhere he went. Because it was. I mean, everywhere he went, he was challenged to a duel, because when you're the best, it's lonely at the top. Everybody's gunning for
you. Well, and look, he had very sound logic. Wasn't it Genghis Khan that died because he was cleaning up for his wedding day and picked his nose, or trimmed his nose hair, and like basically unleashed a scab and bled to death?
Yeah. And
so, I mean, hey, don't get clean for your wedding day. Go stinky. Go stinky, gents.
Yeah. That's terrible advice.
Is it though?
Because bathing's so good for you.
How many people can trace their lineage to Genghis Khan himself? So I mean, was doing something right.
There's a band called The Who right now that's coming up. Really, it's very interesting, because when I first heard their music, I was like, we couldn't make this here. This is insanely racist. They're talking about raiding China again.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, they're the descendants of Khan.
Oh, that's badass.
So I was blown away by that. I was like, wow.
That's badass. Serious.
Now they've got all these American guest people singing with them. I don't know.
Speaking of which, we need to have a guest on soon, guys.
We need to have a guest on soon.
Yeah.
We need to figure out who we're going to have.
Yeah.
Well, just to wrap up, guys, this is what we wanted to talk about for a while now. We've got a lot more we can go into for this, so it will be visited again.
Yeah.
But this was just kind of we wanted to give you something a little deeper, something people had talked about.
Yeah.
And we thought today was the day for it.
Yeah, and this is a subject I'm super passionate about, is deep time and thinking about deep time and looking at our history.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that we'll end up sharing articles about pretty often. Anything that pops up about this is kind of on our radar.
Yeah.
So, anything new? That and recently the UFO stuff blew up like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been kind of fulfilling for me because of my experience. And I always kind of viewed it as a one-off, and I'd never have any kind of justification or verification.
Yeah, it could have been a trip out.
Yeah, and then you sent me that video of... I had never even heard anyone describe a UFO like the one I saw. Yeah. And then you send me a video of one being chased by a jet.
Now-released... Yeah, military video.
It's part of
they follow it for a while.
That Navy intel drop that they did, CIA and Navy intel.
So yeah, we're just talking today. You know, really, it's we don't have a good concept of how time passes or where things are.
Yeah, yeah, we're not good at it.
We have these points in time that we hear about, and the victors write the books.
They do.
What was the quote, Justin?
History's written by the victors, right?
It'll be written by the hunters until the
lion learns to read. The story... until the lion learns to read, the stories will always glorify the hunter.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important way to look at the world. You got to have knowledge. Knowledge is power. Yeah. So,
share it.
I don't want the... I don't want anybody else telling my story, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So you got to be knowledgeable to tell your own story, so.
But yeah, I also don't want, I don't want any lies. Like,
yeah.
Don't go to, like, be like, oh, she lit up a room. Be like, that bitch was a cunt, and you know it. She spoke her mind, and damn it, she drank too much, but you know what? Like, she told it like it was.
Yeah. I fully believe the same thing. And I will pay either one of you to show up in a black robe at my funeral and just stand there creepily in the back. Or pull up in a black Cadillac with blacked out windows and wear a black veil.
I like it.
Fair enough. So friends are four.
Just so people got their own story to tell from my funeral.
I want to put in my will that I am to be wheeled into my own funeral 15 minutes late, so that way people know that it's actually me. Because if I show up on time to my own funeral, they'll be like, that's not Ella. That bitch went on time ever. Like, so I need to be wheeled in late to my own funeral to make sure people know that's actually me.
Yeah.
Well, again, everyone, you have a great evening. We'll be back.
Yeah, keep dumpster diving. Mm-hmm. Throw away kids. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Hop on the Facebook. Share. We're getting some organic growth. Really happy about it. Still can't categorize us.
Yeah.
They're still really struggling.
I want to always defy categorization.
I love it. I think we were linked to a covered bridge fan page.
That's
the closest they've got. I think that's the closest they've got.
We have real Facebook.
A good covered bridge.
Share us with your coworkers, with your friends. You know, if you're like going on a road trip, please just get us out there, because this is great.
If you like what you hear, share us as far as wide as we can.
And then, always put those ideas for dives on our Facebook page, because you know, sometimes we're tired and we get home and we're like, crap, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah.
I don't want to think. My brain doesn't want to work.
Yeah, we always can come up with something, but we like to be a little more researched.
Well, we want to give you what you want too.
Yep. Okay. Well, it's been real, guys.
Later.
Bye.